Welcome to the Leave No Doubt podcast. I'm joined with today Brian Dutton, manager of Salisbury. Just before we get started, I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, Connection Technologies, specialists in telecom and IT services. So I really recommend you go and check them out. Brian, thanks for joining us.
No, my pleasure, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. Cheers. It's Brian. For those guests listening, obviously, I hope people are getting this by now, but I think what we're trying to do is get that real insight into football, into all levels of football, into, you know, those take home messages for players. So I was really, you know, keen to get you on, to get your insights. You're obviously now manager of Salisbury. And, you know, just to kick us off, what does, you know, that semi-professional schedule look like? You know, what's the weekly training schedule, I guess?
Generally, you'd be Tuesday and Thursday evenings training sessions for the lads, which would be how I operate, would be high intensity on the Tuesday evening. And then on the Thursday leading up to the match on Saturday, there'd be a lot of tactical work going into the team you're coming up against. And then on Saturday, you've obviously got the match, and then you won't see the guys again till Tuesday, one-to-one. But you can still have communication on the platforms online if you want to go over anything. But yeah, generally speaking, Dan, it'll be Tuesday and Thursday evenings with matches on Saturday and lots in between.
Yeah, I think that's something I was really interested in, you know, getting insights from you on is, you know, obviously within that semi-professional structure, you know, you don't get the same access you might have had working with players full-time. Like, how do you go about getting that same information into your players, or how do you encourage players to, you know, take on the information, I guess?
Yeah, no, it's a really difficult one because I suppose if you've got the facilities where you've got a classroom that you can use, or a classroom environment you can use before training, that would be the best case scenario, because anything analysis wise that you want to go through with the group, you can use training nights to do that. You can get them in a little bit early, spend half an hour in the classroom, go over the bits and the bobs that you want to go over, and then go out and fulfill a training session. But I'd say that would be a small minority of football clubs in the non-league. So it's then getting the balance of, well, how much do we need the training session and how much do we need the analysis side of it, and weighing up the pros and cons of both. Because ultimately, it's no good just training all the time if the players aren't learning and understanding what your methods are and how you want to set up and perform. And sometimes an analysis session, a video session in a classroom can be one of the best training sessions you have, because it's the visual understanding from the player, and it's a chance for everybody to just review and just talk and discuss, basically. And then when we do go train, there's more clarity and there's more of an understanding of what we're asking. So it's weighing up the balance of getting the analysis and also getting the practical.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this from, like, I guess a player development, what ownership players can take on from themselves kind of lens. You know, is there, like, obviously, how important is it, or, you know, for those players to improve their game development understanding, you know, those players who want to improve, you know, be the best versions of themselves right now, but maybe go up through the leagues as well. You know, what sort of thing, like, how important is it, and what sort of things, you know, do you recommend that they kind of do?
Yeah, it's huge, obviously. I think every player needs to understand their own game and how they fit within a team. So it's vital that players take the responsibility, especially the part-time players, to review their games, watch them back, and try and figure out, with the coach's aid, obviously, of how they can improve. I think, obviously, in the professional environment, you'd have ample time to do that with the players individually and as a group. the difficulty for the non-league players or the part-time players is they've got full-time jobs that they're juggling alongside the football. So you then bring into question burnout and information overload and fatigue. You know, there's nothing more important than rest and recovery for players, as you well know. So it really is a tightrope you're walking in terms of making sure that you get the balance right. If there's overkill and you're overloading a player with information and he's mentally and physically tired, then you can have all the analysis sessions you like. It's just not going to bear fruition.
That's a good point, actually. I was on the phone to a friend the other day. He's playing semi-professional, and he was telling me about how, you know, he's recently moved from a professional environment into a semi-professional environment. He's working all the time. He's got quite a busy job. He was telling me how he had just been, you know, they had an away game where he traveled a long way to get there. They hadn't had the result that they wanted. So they traveled a long way to get back, got back early in the morning. He went into work, and he was telling me how the manager had asked them to review their game before the Tuesday training session. He's going to me on the phone at 9 o'clock on a Monday, traveling to, he's going, oh, I don't know how I'm going to actually, you know, do this. I'm going to have to spend, you know, an hour reviewing my game at night on a Monday night. So I think, yeah, you're right there. That balance, you know, probably is important. And yeah, when you try and get that information into them, and when, you know, actually the rest and focusing on the next game potentially is the most important thing. One of the questions I had for you is how important to you is fitness, and how do you kind of try and achieve that within your working week and schedule?
Fitness is probably the most important, one of the most important factors in any successful individual or team. I made the mistake or learned the lesson fairly early in my career, non-league career, that it doesn't matter how talented you believe you are between your ears or how much of a good player you are, if ultimately you can't outrun or outwork or at least match your opposition with fitness levels, then you'll always be shown up, or, you know, unless you're absolutely extraordinarily talented. But as a lot of young lads do, you go off track when you're young and probably drink too much and eat the wrong foods, and all of a sudden you're having that kickabout with your friends down the local park and you can't get near them. The friends that aren't semi-professional footballers and nowhere near your level, but you're being undermined by them, and that's purely down to the body not being able to follow the mind. So it's huge for me. Fitness is absolutely paramount and key, and you know down there, a healthy body will be a healthy mind, and they go hand in hand. And every successful team, I think, that we've seen down the years, at the forefront of it is fitness.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, isn't it? Like, you don't want it to be the thing that holds you back, and it's probably ultimately something that everyone can get better at quickly, or like I said, not as quickly, but, you know, everyone can get better at it to a degree and to a level versus, you know, the actual time it takes to develop as a player. How would you recommend players get the fitness within your schedule? Do you make it, do you put the onus on them to make sure that they are fit?
I think ultimately, if you want to be reach your goals, whatever your goals are, then it has to come from within. You know, you can have a coach putting on fitness drills and sessions on a Tuesday night, but that's not going to be enough if you want to do anything within the game. It's got to come from within. When everybody else is doing the wrong things, you've got to make sure you're making the sacrifices and doing the right things and getting ahead of the pack. That aside, within my non-league coaching environment, you know, I always try and I love the quote. I don't know who it's by, but it's we don't rise to our expectations. We fall to our level of training. And I really, really like that quote. And it's the same with fitness. We can't just rock up on a Saturday and expect to be fitter than our opponents. We've got to really put in the work on the high-intensity workout days, whether that's a Tuesday or another day. And I always try and something that I probably learned from you, Dan, is that you want to break down the cycles within football matches and what do them toughest periods look like within a football match, and try and replicate that with your training drills. Obviously, we're not going to train for 90 minutes in like a ploddy environment. We've got to break down them little cycles within a football match and understand what they look like, and then try and replicate that within our drills. And I always try and do that on a Tuesday evening when I'm doing some high intensity work with the guys, whether that's the longer stuff or the shorter stuff. We try and match what we'd see in a match.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, isn't it? Like, I think I speak about, you know, there's moments within the game, we call it peak periods or worst case scenarios. Like, there's the moments in the game where it gets really tough. And, you know, if we don't have elements of that within our training program, or players, you know, aren't working to that level within their training program, I don't think you can just expect to go onto the weekend and perform like that. And you're right. I think it's something, you know, I speak to the players or to coaches, is that, you know, that level of training when you're on, it needs to be intense. You know, it needs to be hard, because I think it's a Marines quote or something, is train hard, fight easy. You know, actually, you know, you need to be able to put into practice, you know, what you're going to see on the weekend. So I think that makes loads and loads of sense. And also, you know, the onus on those players to train hard, right? Like, it's all good, you're putting on a session, but they've got to understand that this is, you know, when we want to go at it.
Yeah, 100%. And that's kind of what I'm alluding to when I'm saying it comes from within. You know, players can always cut corners and cheat a little bit, less so now with the technology and the catapult vest, but ultimately, it's got to come from within. It's got to be a desire to be the best, and a desire to, first of all, be better than your teammates, and then obviously your opponents, and wherever you aspire to be, you've got to reach them levels. And that comes from within. That can't be whipped by a coach into action, or potentially it can, but it's only short term. You know, if the player doesn't have the fire in the belly or the motivation, then ultimately they'll always fall short when it comes to getting out of the comfort zone and really sacrificing what you need to sacrifice to become an elite athlete. Dan.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point.
Dan, sorry to interrupt you. Something just come to me. I just want to flip it on you. Now that these referees are getting a little bit silly with the added on time and the crazy amount of minutes they're adding on at the end of matches, how is that influencing you guys in the sports science world in terms of fitness and training? And have you adjusted to that yet, or is it something that you're still looking into?
I think, you know, I guess what we're saying here now is that games are now becoming, instead of 90 minutes or 96 or 97, which you normally get with the added on time, you're getting over 100 minutes. So you're getting that extra volume, I guess, from within the actual game. So for me, like we alluded to a minute ago, I think you have a couple of variables that we control or try to look after. There's the intensity, which you spoke about, and making sure that we're training for the right levels of intensity. But within our training week, the volume is what we, you know, prepare for, or we periodize our week for. You know, we have our bigger, longer days and we have our shorter days. You know, I think that whilst those extra 5 or 6 minutes that are going on, and I don't know and I haven't seen any research on it, I wonder how much actual ultimate difference it's really making, if you know what I mean. Because a lot of the time within a football game, you know, we're only really talking about 10, 15 really hard minutes. And then you're probably talking about 20 minutes within that 25 minutes, which is, you know, still hard, but not hard sort of thing. So I wonder how much real hard work it's adding on, or whether it's just that total volume and time on feet, which I think we can offset by just having or being generally fit, and then managing our weeks accordingly, if that makes sense. So I don't know how much impact that's making, but if I was to prepare players for it, I would just ensure the same sort of principles and, you know, make sure we're fit to, you know, run around, like aerobically fit, generally fit. And then I would look at managing the volume of time that players are spending on. You know, if for example, I think the biggest shock comes when it's a change. The change, I'm used to doing 90 minutes, now I'm doing 100 minutes, so that's a 10-minute change, right? But I think what we probably end up seeing is that down the line, players will adapt to it. And remember back to the COVID times, you know, those games coming back were lots longer, because I think maybe due to it being a summer and all the water breaks within the games and things like that, the games kind of just got extended and the non-quick balls were allowed for throw-ins and stuff like that. So we were looking at 100-minute plus games then. So I don't know. I don't know what you're seeing.
Well, I'm disgruntled because it's really affecting us guys at this level, this humble level, because obviously at the Premier League and the Championship level, you've got 2 to 3 players for each position. So you've got big squads and you're also able to make 5 substitutions, where us guys here, we've only got small squads and we're only able to make 3 substitutions. But I'm just interested in terms of the strategy for managers moving forward, whether or not stamina is going to be a key quality they look for within their teams if we're going to go and play these crazy amount of added on minutes, and whether or not there'll be more tactics around substitutions and freshness within matches these days, because and also injuries, you know, like, I don't know, when you're tired and you're fatigued, I assume that's when you're most vulnerable to then pulling your muscle or cause an injury. So now it's going to be interesting to see who adapts quickly and uses this as an advantage.
Yeah, you're right. And like you said, I think you've alluded to it there, like, the if you want to prepare yourself better, the fitter you are, the more able you're going to be able to cope with the longer lengths, you know, the more repeatable you are going to be between games, you know, the quicker you will recover, the longer you can cope. And like you say, yeah, like the less fit players playing for that length of time will become more of an injury risk. So, you know, I think there is probably an element where maybe there is a greater onus on the fitness side of things.
And a quality.
But, you know.
And a quality within a player as well, Dan. I was a bit ploddy as a player, but I always had great stamina and felt like once I got my second wind, I could keep going and keep going. And, you know, them type of players might be more attractive to managers these days if this is the way we're going with it.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, you look at, I think it's something like 30% of goals are scored in the last 10 minutes or 10, 15 minutes. You know, a lot of goals are scored there. So if you've got a squad that's fitter going into those last 10 minutes, you know, you're definitely going to have a performance advantage from that, I guess. So especially when you can't use as many substitutions to impact the game as well.
Yeah.
So that's the way it's going. Yeah. Maybe it is, or maybe it's a case of, you know, players are going to adapt and get fitter.
Best case scenario, hopefully the referees, rein it in, or the people making the decisions come to their senses and pull back a little bit on this.
Yeah. I mean, only time will tell, don't it? But I think we ultimately end up adapting to whatever environment we see, don't we? We find the we find the way to perform in it. So I'd be it'd be interesting to see. But you're right, it will accumulate. You know, total volume does accumulate over time. So, you know, 10 minutes for one game, if you're playing a 40-game season, you're going to end up playing, you know, an extra 10 games, aren't you?
Yeah.
So.
The evolution of football, eh?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I guess the other thing you've alluded to there, the difference, I guess, between, you know, that non-league, that semi-professional and the professional game that you've obviously experienced as well. In players or, you know, at that level, what would you say are the biggest differences between a semi-professional footballer and a player maybe playing League Two or League One football?
Good question. I've always felt that the higher I got up within the playing and then coaching pyramid, the more humble and hardworking the athlete were. So at the low level of non-league, you probably find more characters who are style over substance. You know, they want to look and behave and act like a professional footballer, but the professional footballers are more prepared to do the hard miles and make the sacrifices and prepare correctly and be professional. Whereas the non-league guys, I think it's probably between their ears where there's the shortfall, the shortcomings, where they're not quite got the mentality, that elite mentality, to make the sacrifices or to eat the right foods or go to bed at the right time. This kind of stuff that maybe we take for granted. And the extras after training, making sure that they're keeping themselves in the best physical condition to perform. You know, I feel like the non-league guys, not all the non-league guys, just speaking in general, maybe they let their disappointment and the mood dictate how they behave. Whereas as I got further and further up the pyramid, the professional guys had that more professional head on the shoulders. And whatever the situation, they understood that the body is a source of income, and they need to look after the body and make sure, whatever the situation, that they're staying professional and staying ready. So yeah, I don't see huge amounts of technical deficiencies in the non-league guys. I just see a difference in mindset, and I've never worked at Championship or Premier League level, but I suppose once you get into that kind of stage, you're coming across some serious mindsets and mentalities that are all conquering.
Welcome to the Leave No Doubt podcast. I'm so excited to welcome our new sponsors, Connection Technologies, a market leader in business-to-business tools ranging from business mobile, hosted telephony, and fixed line services. Head over to their website at www.connection-technologies.co.uk. Fill in their inquiry web form and find out how Connection Technologies can support your business moving forward.
Do you think that's a learned thing? Do you think it's because of the environments that they've obviously come through at, or do you think it's, you know, players will just revert or fall down to the level that they're prepared to put themselves to? In a way, and I say that in that, like, we talk about, you know, that professional, it's hard, you know, training is hard, living life right is hard, it's difficult, and, you know, some people, that's what they want to be, some people, you know, and that might not want to be that level of committed to it. So do you think it's something that players, you know, need to be taught at that lower level if they want to go and kick on, or you know, or do you think players find themselves at a level because they don't really want to be or that high?
Oh, no, I definitely would put the major contributing factor down to the environment. You know, the environment's mm-hmm. massive, and it'll carry a lot of people a long way. You know, the behavioral habits of your peers is huge, good or bad. If you're in a poor environment, you know, it's very difficult for you to stay single-minded and focus on the positives. Whereas ultimately, if you're in a super positive environment with really talented guys with strong mindsets, then you know you can't help but learn from them guys and take on them habits, and you're naturally going to improve. So no, I always feel that if you have good seniors, you'll have good juniors. You know, it's something that's clear to me, and I always try and, when we're trying to sign players, always make sure that they're the right fit, because ultimately if you've signed the wrong characters or too many of them, then they'll carry the other guys with them, the guys that aren't, you know, potentially strong enough to forge their own path.
Yeah, no, definitely. And yeah, it's those, I guess, those leaders in the group. Everyone talks about, you know, how good James Milner is, for example, at Liverpool, and, you know, what example he sets. And people speak about him moving to Brighton has been so good for Brighton, not just because of the player James Milner is, but what he's going to bring to that dressing room. So, you know, I think it's seen throughout all of the levels, isn't it? Like, you know, those ones that are going to be the positive influence on the team, and the professional players who, you know, are willing to do that and lead by example.
Yeah, I'm big on people like James Milner, Jordan Henderson, these characters, because they cajole others. You know, when James Milner is coming back to pre-season and he's winning all the fitness tests and leaving shaming the youngsters, and you can't help but be inspired. And also, like Jordan Henderson, I don't know if you've seen that clip during the COVID years where Jordan Henderson's playing in a match, but you can hear all the audio that he's speaking, and he's just a manager's dream. You know, the amount of cajoling he does to other players, and you know, making sure that people are doing their jobs and demanding it of them. And that's not in that old school nasty way where you're gonna upset people. It's in a really emotional, intelligent way where you're going to get the best from your teammates, and you know that is a great skill, a great quality to have. I feel like we're probably that type of player or character is a dying breed now, and they are worth the weight in gold, and that's why you see a lot of Premier League clubs now hiring former pros or pros that are coming towards the end of the career to work or to play in the under-23s, under-21 environments, because it's like osmosis, isn't it? You naturally pick up on how they behave and all the good habits that they impose.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great point, and it's probably something for players to look at and think about within their game, right? You know, in the game that they're on the match day, you know, what are the messages that I'm sharing with my teammates, you know, or how am I acting, you know, on the off the ball, and like, how am I acting, how am I communicating to people? And then, you know, the other side of things of, you know, have a real deep look at, you know, if you aspire to be, move up the levels, the best version of you can on the football field, like, are you making sure that you're doing everything right? It leads me quite nicely, like talking about, you know, environments and teams. As a player, you were a part of a Salisbury team that, you know, back-to-back promotions from that non-league semi-professional environment. What was it, you know, about that time and that team, you know, was what made it successful, I guess?
It's funny because we played a game at the weekend there. We beat the league favourites in our league, Walton and Hersham, 1-0. And we scored a late goal, an 85th minute goal. And I said to my assistant, Callum Hart, that that goal felt like it meant something more than just a goal to win the game. And I think in all successful teams, there's like moments within the season where you think, hold on a minute, we could do something here. And I think the bedrock of every successful team, like we spoke about earlier, is the hard work that you put in and the sacrifice. Whenever you look back on the season, you always look back to them. I wouldn't call them dark days, but testing days where you need to overcome the demons and prove yourself, usually within fitness. And I always feel if you can come through that and you can start the season positively and create these moments within the season, it kind of snowballs. And then you end up getting to the mid part of the season in a really healthy state. And you're almost having to then go again. It's like a second wind, if you will, some more fitness to make sure you're topped up, ready for the running. And, you know, luck plays a big part in how you get on within a full season. But ultimately, I always feel it comes down to the hard work and the sacrifice that you put in at the beginning of the season. And then them moments within the season, them special moments where the hard work pays off. And if you can keep them, that positive momentum going and keep it rolling in the right direction and steer clear of any severe injuries, I always feel like you're not going to be too far away if you've got a good group under the bonnet, you know.
And I guess players within, like, you know, within teams wanting to try and become or get that momentum or keep it going, you know, what can they kind of learn from it? You know, is the advice just to maximize those moments or, you know, make sure you make the hard work pay off or, you know, put the hard work in so you know that you get confidence for it?
I think probably bond, Dan. Spend time together, have your team nights out, create them relationships, create the positivity that you want to spend time with each other and you enjoy each other's company because ultimately team spirit will take you a hell of a long way in any sport, in any discipline, because it helps you through them dark moments. It helps you through the testing times. You know, if you haven't got them bonds and them connections, it's very difficult to keep going. It's a slog. It truly is a marathon. So I think we obviously have to pay massive attention to the technical aspects within football and the physical aspects within football. But, you know, under all great teams are managers that understand the importance of the human side of football and the stress and just suffering that you have to go through to be successful. And we sometimes forget that and come away from that. And it's important that we also enjoy ourselves.
I mean, that's a really good point, isn't it? Like, actually, you know, it's a team game, you know, we're doing it together, you're doing it as a group of people, and ultimately you want to have as much fun doing it. And if you create that bond and that togetherness, you know, that's going to probably hopefully push you. I mean, I've got a couple of good examples. We spoke to Tom Lockyer for, you know, the Bristol Rovers captain. They obviously went back-to-back promotions from National League to League Two to League One. And he spoke about, you know, having a really close group of friends back then, people that, you know, he's made friendships with that, you know, will last, a lifetime sort of thing. So, you know, actually it's something that goes maybe a little bit deeper, but you create those bonds and those memories of those players. And then I just got another, a good one, you know, my previous days before football, we used to work in a rugby team, Saracens, for those who don't know, a highly successful team. And they used to do this thing, which was a little bit left field, where they would always take the team before, you know, got into the crunch part of the season. So you go into European quarterfinals, that stage, they would take the team away for a week. You know, they took them doing really, you know, strange things you'd think, like skiing, or they took them to beer fests and different things like that, just because they believed that, you know, the risk and the reward from it, like the bonding those players would have got from that 1 week, was worth, you know, an extra 2 months worth of real togetherness in a sport where, you know, you're fighting for each other. So, I think it's really valuable, and probably something that, you know, we always think about, you've got to be this fit, you've got to, you know, understand all this game plan, all this sort of stuff. But, you know, if you've got that relationship to the guy next to you, and you're prepared to help him and work together and win with him, then it's probably massive, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the most important thing is that you, as an individual working within a team, is that you're happy and you're really comfortable within your environment, and you want to make sacrifices for your teammates. It's very difficult to perform if you're uptight and you're tense and you're agitated and aggravated and you've got a snarly demeanor about you. I don't know many athletes that perform to their optimum with them characteristics. I think all the greatest athletes had a natural flow to them. You know, there was no tension in the body whatsoever. They were 110% comfortable in their own skin and the environment. And us as coaches and managers, we've got to set that environment. And you can only do that through the bonding sessions and the guys getting together and just relaxing and enjoying each other's company. So, no, it's absolutely huge. Probably one of the most important aspects within football. So we make sure that we try and pay as much attention to that side of it as the physical and the technical.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the questions I had, obviously, we've spoken a lot about the on-field environment being right, and obviously the players and them together. How important is it, you know, that the off-field environment for players? And, you know, I think about, you know, players that move into, or you might have had experience of players moving to clubs and trying to settle in, or players, you know, where the off-field isn't quite right and it affects, you know, their performance on it. And, you know, how can this be supported, I guess, within a football environment?
Yeah, no, it's a real tricky one, isn't it? Because just similar to the last point of a player needing to feel comfortable in his environment, of being one of the most important factors in him performing, homesickness and players being away from where they're most comfortable is going to affect that. And it's a real difficult one to remedy, because a lot of the time players now, especially at the top level, they're moving countries, not just moving, you know, regions. And I suppose we've got better now within the professional game of having welfare officers and people looking out for the guys and making sure that they've got everything they need. But ultimately, I think it goes back to the point of trying to create them connections within a footballing team. Because football is as corny and as cliche as it sounds, it is a universal language. You know, it doesn't matter where you are, where you're from in the world, you know, you can connect with people via football. I think the most important thing to make people feel comfortable, or footballers be comfortable, is creating them connections within their teammates. So to try and create them relationships and get an understanding for who they are and who they're talking to, and have things in common, and try and relax them as much as possible. Also, the support network from the family and friends back home, making sure that they've got them connections and got access to them. But no, it's a really tricky one, because the upheaval of young footballers moving from their comfort zone into a new environment is always going to be a testing period. And I suppose as managers and coaches, you just need that emotional intelligence of understanding that it might take a little bit of time before we see the best of these players.
Yeah, I guess you kind of answered my next question within that question there, and it was more around like you obviously worked in youth football. You've worked with squads where, you know, you brought through young players. And yeah, I guess my question was going to be like, how do you support those young players, you know, or, and I guess you mentioned there around is, you know, being patient with the expectation and making sure they have that support around the environment. You know, what do you see in those young players that go on to be successful? What's the difference to those that might not be so successful on the field?
The difference with the youngsters that I've seen that become successful, I would always, obviously you need talent, but the work ethic is the key for me. That's the most important factor. You know, if you've got the right mentality and work ethic about you, then no matter how far behind you are, you can still overtake people, because you're going to outwork them and outwork them intelligently. Whereas the talented guys who haven't got the same work ethic, then they obviously can be caught up. So that would be the first factor that I would look for in any youngster, is what's the work ethic, what's their desire and determination like. And if they're ticking them boxes, then you've got a chance. You've got a chance to do something. If you haven't ticked them boxes, then ultimately the skill and the technical ability, it's going to get you in the room, but it's probably not going to keep you there.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I'm just conscious of time, and we're just finishing off. I mean, I think I probably know the answer to this, but you know, I put it back on. I mean, this is all about giving, you know, real take home advice and messages to aspiring players. If I was a young aspiring player, what one thing would you say I should go in action and put to practice tomorrow?
Probably, Dan. Leading back to that last answer is maybe the goals, your goals, and how you're going to achieve them. I said work ethic and determination and desire. They're the boxes that I'd look for young players to tick. But ultimately, you've got to work smart as well as hard. And working smart is understanding what you're trying to achieve and how you're going to achieve that. And that's going to get you to your destination a lot quicker than somebody who's just ultimately working hard. So, no, I'd ask you to maybe write out your goals and then explain how you're going to achieve them. And then we can go from there.
Yeah, it's a brilliant practice of like self-awareness as well, isn't it? You know, everyone wants to, you know, be there, or everyone thinks that they can just go work hard. But actually, you know, having a bit more focus, you know, how important is that? Thank you. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing your insights this evening.
No, my pleasure, Dan. Really enjoyed the podcast and the previous guests, and keep up the good work.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And thank you to our sponsors, Connection Technologies, for sponsoring the episode.